You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 177. Today's episode's all about riding in a Mardi Gras parade. As we close out Carnival 2023, I've gotten a lot of questions about this topic, and today I'm going to take you into the ins and outs of it. The last episode was all about another Mardi Gras topic, king cake. My guest was author Matt Haynes, who sampled more than 80 different king cakes while telling the stories of the people who made them. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen, then check out Matt's fabulous coffee table book and his board book for children. We'll put links to that in the show notes, by the way. Before we jump into today's topic, though, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's a combination blog and online exhibition space. You can find it at hnoc.org/firstdraft. Through April 17, 2023, check out the exhibit titled French Quarter Life, People and Places in the Vieux Carré. It features artists from around the world who have worked to capture and share their impressions of New Orleans' most iconic and historic neighborhood. On April 28th, they kick off a new exhibit, and this one's about women's right to vote. It's titled, Yet She Is Advancing, New Orleans Women and the Right to Vote, 1878 to 1970. The 19th Amendment granted American women the right to vote in 1920, but Louisiana effectively disenfranchised black women. As many white women began going to the polls and increasing their political participation in segregation-era New Orleans, African-American women continued to fight for access to the ballot. From paying poll taxes to organizing voter registration drives, black women challenged their status as second-class citizens up to and through the passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965. This exhibit tells a decades-long story through objects, images, documents, and interactive displays, and through the words of the New Orleans women who for nearly 100 years persisted in their struggle to obtain the vote. As always, the Historic New Orleans Collection is free. It somehow continues to fly under the radar, but it shouldn't be missed. If you haven't been, please make a trip to see it on your next visit here. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip, and again, we'll put links to them in our show notes, which will be at beyondbourbonst.com/177. Next up is Two Chicks Walking Tours. March 2023 marks the return of Two Chicks as a sponsor of Beyond Bourbon Street, and I couldn't be happier about that. There's been a lot that's changed in our lives and in our world during the past 3 years, but our collective love of New Orleans is stronger than ever. Longtime listeners probably remember the crew over at Two Chicks operates intentionally small public walks. So they have 14 guests maximum compared to 28 on their tours, which is half the size of the city ordinance, and they operate 7 days a week. Their experiences are focused in the Garden District and the French Quarter. They're also producing private curated walks for groups sized from 1 to 200 when they're asked, so you can reach out to them and get a totally curated private tour. While the team is female-led by Christine Miller, they do have a rooster starting around, and there are tour guides from before the lockdown still on staff. There's also one of our community members, Kieran Pittman, who is now a tour guide with them. So they're looking forward to seeing you on the streets. Find out more at twochickswalkingtours.com, and again, we'll put a link in the show notes. And we're going to go back to some live events, and one of them is going to be a tour with Two Chicks Walking Tour, so you can look for more information on that coming soon. So with that, let's jump in. So I get a lot of questions about Mardi Gras and about riding in a carnival parade, and I had the opportunity to ride this year for the first time in more than a decade, and so I thought I would kind of cover the ins and outs and how it works and a little bit of my experience. So first off, how do you join a Mardi Gras crew? The answer is it kind of depends. So the first thing you can do is go to their website, look up the whatever, say Crew of Muses or Crew of Iris or Hermes, whatever it might be. And you know, in most cases, you'll find a membership link or a link for information about membership. Many of them are open, meaning you just go in, you sign up, you fill out a form, you get the information about what it costs. And then if they have a spot, they usually put you through a little bit of a vetting process. And each Mardi Gras crew organization is different. In some cases, you'll find a waiting list. And what that means is that They don't have enough spots for riders, but in some cases you can join and not ride until there's an opportunity. In other cases, they will allow guests. So there are members of carnival organizations that for whatever reason maintain their membership, but they might not ride. They might be out of town. They might have other things planned. They might be getting older. Maybe they just want to take a year off from riding. And as we're going to get into it, the expense of that. And so sometimes you can ride as a guest of a member. In those cases, you generally have to be sponsored by a member. In some other cases, if you went to the website, say for Rex or Proteus or some of the older carnival crews, you won't find any information about membership. And that's because you have to be invited. So in those instances, the only way to get into them is if a member, an existing member of that organization, chooses to ask you to participate. And generally, they may ask, they may sponsor you for membership, but generally you start off as a guest rider. And so it really depends, but there's a range for everyone. There are crews that are easy to join, and there are crews that are very difficult to get into. What does membership get you? Well, for the most part, it's almost like joining a country club in that there's a membership fee, and it's just sort of a basic fee to get in. There are additional fees that we're going to get into. But one of the things I wanted to point out, and the reason I'm recording this in March, right after Mardi Gras, is because in the next month or two is when you should be thinking about if you want to ride next year in 2024, or whenever you're listening to this, in the next year. Most of the organizations that have openings start to take requests pretty quickly in April and May of the year before. So April, May right now in 2023, for people who might want to ride in 2024. And that includes getting on wait lists, submitting names for membership, or if you have to be sponsored, that sort of thing. So now's really the time to think about next Mardi Gras. One of the things to keep in mind is that there are a lot of fees and there's a big range. So when you join, your membership fee, typically it varies by organization, but again, it's mostly a sunk cost. In some cases, it may include tickets to their ball, if they have a ball or other events, but it typically will not include anything to do with the actual ride. So what I mean by that is, if you join a carnival crew as a member, you're going to pay a fee, and then you're going to pay a fee each year to ride, and then you'll have to pay for your throws. And so all of the things that you see flying off the floats, that individual who threw them actually paid for them. So the organization doesn't pay for them. They may create a package so that the member or the rider can buy a package for a set amount. But all of that is paid for by the individual that has tossed you those beads or trinkets or whatever it might be. But there's fees to consider. So there might be rider fees. Some organizations charge a separate fee for the ball. So there is often a formal ball. Some organizations have like extravaganzas. So Orpheus, Endymion, Bacchus, they ride into either the convention center or the Superdome, and there's a big party that anyone can pay a fee and go to. And it usually includes a ton of live music. It does not typically include food or drink, so you have to bring that in separately. And those tend to be formal affairs, so women in ball gowns and men in tuxedos. In other cases, there are traditional balls, which, gosh, that could be a whole other episode, but a ball typically is tied into the debutante season. And so particularly with the old line crews, those balls might be strictly formal. So for instance, tails for men, and for women, not only ball gowns that go to the floor, but opera gloves that go to the elbow. Often those are included in the fee, but not always. And then you have to also consider the cost, right? You either have to buy or rent a ball gown or a tuxedo, or again, this year I went to a couple of balls that were strictly formal. So I have a tuxedo, but I didn't have tails, so I had to rent tails. You have to think about food and drinks as an expense, both if you go to one of these extravaganzas. If you go to a ball, they may or may not have food, and they typically will have drinks. And usually it's an open bar, but not always. You also have to think about the expense if you are out of town, your travel and your hotel. Other things to keep in mind that you will pay for are tips. So typically when you arrive, and I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but when you actually arrive the morning of or the day of your your ride, you're going to go to a location and get dressed there in your costume. And you'll want to have money for tips for the valets or the attendants that are helping you get dressed. There's usually a seamstress there for minor alterations. You might have to pay for parking. There is typically a fee. So each float is pulled by a tractor, and the float captain or lieutenant will collect some money from each of the riders to tip that driver. So typically, I think this year, the parade that I rode in, we each chipped in $20. There's probably 20 riders, maybe 20 riders on our float. So, you know, that's $400 for the tractor driver. And then you may be asked to either contribute food and drink or to contribute some money for those things, or the captain or lieutenant of the float might take care of them. So again, kind of just an overall, how do I join? The first thing is go to a website and look it up. The second would be, if you know someone who rides, talk to them, because they'll be able to tell you the ins and outs. They're going to be able to tell you whether there's an open membership or whether you have to be sponsored. And if you know someone, then they may very well be willing to sponsor you. And they're also going to know if there's opportunities to ride as a guest. So for instance, this year, I rode in an organization that I was just simply a guest. So a member asked if I would like to ride. I got on their wait list of guest riders. In fact, I only found out the day before that I was going to be able to ride. So that's something that, you know, obviously if you're not local, that's a tough thing to do. But that's not the way in all of the organizations. They really vary from organization to organization. And again, some of the, even the ones that anyone can join at any time, they have a long wait list. So Muses comes to mind, terrific all-female crew that rides on the Thursday before Mardi Gras. There's a real demand. Lots of women want to ride in that organization. So there is a wait list. I think that they probably do guest riders as well. If you're a guest rider, you're going to pay the fee to ride and then the cost of your throws. And if there is a ball fee and you want to go to that, then you'll pay for that as well. So I say all that to say there's a lot of things to think about. Now is the time to do it. I want to talk a little bit about overall what you can expect in terms of fees. Membership fees run quite a range from a couple hundred to a couple $1,000s, depending on the organization. And then the rider fees for the actual, if you're going to ride in the parade, again, kind of run that range. So I have ridden in parades where the cost to ride is as low as $300. And I've ridden in parades where the cost to ride is as much as $1,200 or $1,500. And sometimes there's a premium. So if you ride in a parade like, say, Orpheus, and you ride on one of the signature floats, Orpheus is Harry Connick's parade that parades on Lundy Gras, the night before Mardi Gras. If you ride on Leviathan, the float with the dragon, or the float that is the dragon, that is Leviathan, you pay a premium compared to riding on some of the other floats. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But your fees to ride, again, are going to range from a couple hundred to perhaps maybe even 1500 or higher, depending. And then you have to buy your throws. So the other thing I should point out is there are also truck floats on Mardi Gras Day. And I'm speaking specifically about New Orleans. You can ride in the other parishes. So Jefferson Parish, where Metairie is, has many parades. And you can ride there as well. In general, the fees for everything associated with those parades tends to be cheaper than in New Orleans. But all the parades I've ridden in over the years are in New Orleans. So that's my experience. On Mardi Gras Day, you have the opportunity to ride in what are called truck floats. And truck floats are basically built on a flatbed 18-wheeler. And they are typically, each float, if you will, each truck is its own organization. And you can join those. The big organization is either Elks or Orleanians, but then within, so that's the name of the parade, but within them, each float is its own organization. And you can join and ride with them. Often you'll see families do it. That's how we did it when we were growing up. My parents joined a group and it was all just a bunch of friends and family riding together. My kids' school sponsors a float each year, and kids that want to ride can sign up and join, and they're riding with teachers and chaperones. And so in that instance, not only is it co-ed, but it's kids and adults as well. And that's a generally the least expensive way to ride and a lot of fun. And you have the most variety in terms of you can throw almost anything you want as long as it's not branded with the brand of another carnival organization. And you can't throw anything commercial. So I couldn't throw anything labeled Beyond Bourbon Street, for instance. But the quote-unquote regular parades, there's also limits. So you can only throw items that are branded with that crew. So if you ride in the in Bacchus or Rex or Muses or Toth or any of them, you can't throw something that is labeled from another parade. So you can recycle. You can buy used beads. And there's actually ARC, which is a local organization that helps disabled people. They collect beads. People after carnival end up with all these beads and they donate them. Well, they will sort them out and you can go and buy recycled beads, which both include themed beads. So if you are riding in a particular parade and they have themed items that don't have a year on them, then you can buy them from them. And that's a way to save a little bit of money. And you can also buy generic beads that don't have any kind of identifier on them. Same thing with trinkets, so you can do that as well. But many of the crews are pretty strict in terms of what you can throw, and so you can buy what's called a rider package. So this year, the crew that I rode in, and I'm specifically not naming it because I was part of the agreement with them, you had a rider package. And essentially, you couldn't deviate very much from that. There's about five or six things that come in the package. It included beads that were branded with the specific organization's name on them. It included things like koozies, some stuffed animals, Nerf-type footballs. But there's only about six or seven things that they throw because that parade, they're known for their throws and they want it to be very uniform. So they don't want riders to have a big range of different things. They're known for their specific things and that's what they want you to throw. In others, there'll be a mix where there are branded things and you can also buy whatever you want from local stores that sell the beads, or you can buy a package from them that sells a variety of things. So that really varies. And again, when it comes to throws, you're looking at anywhere from, gosh, maybe $700 on the low end to, I know people in some of the big parades that have long routes spend $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 on throws. So you're talking, again, say $300 to $1,500 to join and ride, and another $700 to $3,000, or the sky's the limit on what you want to throw. To give you an idea, I think I paid about $1,500 for my actual throw package this year, and then I paid a fee to ride. So I think for me, I spent about $2,000 this year. Truck parades are much cheaper. We used recycled beads. We were kids, so this is a long time ago. But we used recycled beads, both what we had just kind of in the attic from years of catching beads as kids, and then buying used beads from people locally that were just looking to get rid of them. So, you know, I think as a family, it's a relatively affordable way to do it. As an adult, you know, it's something to consider. It's not particularly inexpensive, but it can be, what I'll say, moderately expensive to just outrageous. Now, I've ridden in four different organizations multiple times in total. So I've probably ridden about seven, eight, nine times, you know, and again, I've seen that range from a total outlay of under $1,000 to maybe $2,500. And so that factors into what I'm willing to do. Now, that also doesn't include, you know, like this year I had to rent tails. In past years, I purchased a tuxedo so that I would have to go to the balls. And the balls are typically optional. Now, if you are in a parade that has an extravaganza, so that the floats actually go into an arena, again, Bacchus and Endymion and Orpheus all do that, well, then you really can't get out of it. You're going to get off your float. Now, the advantage is you don't need dress clothes because you're going to wear your costume, but there is a separate fee beyond riding for that essentially for joining the ball or the entertainment. Now, incidentally, let's say I rode in Endymion, which I did not ride this year, but let's say I rode in Endymion and Marie wanted to join me. Well, we would have to pay a ticket for her and she would have to wear a ball gown to go to that. It's not really a ball, but to go to that organization's party. The difference between those, the parties and the balls. So a ball is a formal event It generally ties into debutante season. So they will have the king and the queen, and they will have the court. So those will be young women who have been selected to be members of the court. So almost think of it like bridesmaids at a wedding. But then they typically, particularly the old line crews, will use this as debutante season and will present debutantes. So there might be another dozen or 20 debutantes who are presented at this ball. And so it's a kind of a formal event where they announce the debutantes, they announce their names, their families, all that sort of thing. Again, what all balls and extravaganzas have in common is that they are parties. The more formal ones, there might be some dancing, there might not be. The big ones, like the three I've mentioned several times, they have typically well-known entertainers that come and perform, and it's more of a concert. What's interesting about that, though, is, again, if you are not a rider and you show up to those, you have to buy a ticket, you have to be dressed up, you have to bring in your own food or have it catered, as well as your own alcohol if you drink. And so it always struck me as odd. We have done it a couple times. We've also been guests of riders who took care of that for us. But it always strikes me as odd when you see people going to those events, which are a lot of fun, but they're all dressed up and they're lugging down the street containers with food or ice chests or that sort of thing. So it is worth doing. If you're coming from out of town, you've never been, you want to do something like that, it is fun, but it does require some planning and either hiring a vendor to provide food at your table, or you kind of have to schlep it all in. It's just a lot, I guess, is what I would say. Something else I didn't mention that I think people don't realize when you're in the crowd is that you're required by city ordinance to wear a harness, a safety harness. And so it's basically made out of seatbelt material, but it's a harness that goes around you and then has to be clipped in. And when you are on a float, you have to be clipped in at all times. Now, it is still possible for people to fall because you could fall and essentially be dangling from the harness, but it's required. And in some cases, you have to pay for that harness. So one of the parades Marie and I rode in years ago, we actually had to buy the harnesses. We still have them. The parade I rode in this year, there were harnesses. So when you got dressed, the valet handed you a harness and helped you get it on your body. And then when you got on the float, there's a clip where you know, it's like a carabiner. So you clip that into a fixed structure on the fixed hook on the float itself. So there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes there, even just preparing to ride, right? So all those things. Now, in most cases, well, let me give you the exception. If you're riding in a truck parade, you will be making your own costume. And generally, there'll be some rules and requirements and often, you know, try to make them look the same. So everybody agrees in that organization what the theme is going to be. You're going to help decorate that float throughout the year, and then you're going to make your own costume. If you're riding in a traditional Mardi Gras organization or crew, they're going to have the costumes because they want them to be very standardized. And so you're going to go and get dressed the day of, and they're going to have the costumes usually all there, and you will get dressed physically at the, so like this year was extremely hot on the day I rode. So show up in street clothes, put on shorts and a t-shirt, old shoes that are comfortable, and then you get dressed in the costume. The costumes can be very heavy. They can be very hot. So my costume was made out of all satin or polyester, and it included a headpiece and a piece that draped over your neck, as well as a plastic mask, gloves. The organization I rode in this year, like many of them, the idea is supposed to be that you're anonymous. So they try to cover up your whole body, essentially, except for your mask has cutouts for your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. But they basically want you to look homogeneous, right? And so that the whole idea, and kind of going back to the foundation of Carnival and Mardi Gras, is it's anonymous. In other cases, some use makeup, but there is a city requirement that you have, that you're masked at all times. Now, again, in some cases, makeup passes for a mask, but you can't take off your mask while you're riding. And in the organization I rode in this year, you had a headpiece as well, and both of those things had to be on at all times, and they monitor that. And so one, if your float lieutenant or captain noticed that you didn't have something on, they would immediately tell you. But there are monitors for the organization, because again, they want this to be consistent. It's a brand, right, if you will. And so they're watching throughout the parade to make sure, and either you or your float captain or both will get feedback afterwards. And if you are, let's say, a guest rider hoping to become a member and you don't obey those rules, you're not likely to be invited to become a member. You know, it's a moving art festival, if you will, or art installation. And there are things you take for granted when you're in the crowd. But if you go back and look, if you took any pictures this year, if you look at pictures, you'll notice everyone is masked. And if you see that they aren't, or if you would see different costumes, it would really be jarring. So I think it's easy to take for granted when you're in the crowd, but when it all works, when everyone is masked and everyone has the same costume that's tied into the theme of the float and then therefore tied into the theme of the parade, it really does flow like a moving art exhibition. And if that gets messed up, if some people aren't doing it, or if there were different costumes, or some people had part of a costume on and not the other, you would really see the difference. And again, the truck floats are a lot of fun, but now that I've told you that, if you're here for Mardi Gras Day and you're in the crowd and you've been to parades throughout the weekend, let's say, and then you've seen Zulu and Rex that morning, and then you stick around for the truck parades, you'll see it. You'll see the difference in consistency between, say, Rex and Zulu and the truck floats. Now, again, there's nothing wrong with the truck floats. We loved doing it. I imagine we'll probably do it with our kids now that they're getting a little older, but it's a different experience. And you'll notice that as well. Let's say in the weekends, I don't want to call out specific crews, but there are some that are a little more strict than others. Again, there's a requirement by the city, but there are some that are a little more strict than others. There are some that the costumes are more elaborate than others. And so that's just something to pay attention to as you're watching now in future years. You'll see the difference if you're looking for it. So I've kind of talked about things you need to think about ahead of time. I want to kind of move then and talk about the day of the ride. So there are parades in the mornings, in the afternoons, and in the evenings. You're going to arrive early. So several hours before the parade starts, you're going to expect to gather at wherever the meeting place is. Some organizations have their own dens. So those are basically warehouses where the floats are stored, and they will leave from the den. And so everyone will load onto the float at the den. In other cases, there will be a lineup spot, and you typically, if that's the case, you'll meet at a central location and they will bus you to where the floats are lined up. So a lot of parades line up on Chapultepec, and the organization you'll meet basically near the end of the route, and they will put you on a bus and take you to your float, and then you'll load up on the float there. I've done it both ways. This year, I left out of a den, so that was kind of an interesting experience. Often there'll be a community meal and drinks ahead of time. So if you're in the morning, there'll be a breakfast. If it's a midday, maybe same thing. If you're riding in an evening or nighttime parade, there'll probably be a lunch. Look, it's a long day. They know a lot of people are going to be drinking. They want to get food in you. You want to get food in you. And it's also really a fun atmosphere. Everybody's getting dressed and you sit down for a communal meal. You may have a drink. It's a good time to hang out with people if you know them, and if you don't, get to know your fellow riders, and you really want to make sure that you take advantage of that. Again, because it's fun, but also because you want to have food in you. In most cases with parades, there's a loading day ahead of time. And so some carnival crews require you to be there or to hire someone or find a friend that will physically help load the beads and trinkets and everything you're going to throw onto your float. I've done that before, and certainly if you ride in a truck parade, that's the expectation, you're going to do that. In other cases, some of the big organizations will load for you, and there might be a preview day. So that's something, too, to keep in mind. A lot of the organizations just have an open house, which anybody can go and just see the floats for the year, and that's really a fun thing to go see it, because when you see them all in a den, it's a very different experience than when they're flying by you on the street. But for riders, there's typically a loading day where you'll go and there might be a little party, and the beads and throws are loaded onto the float. The organization that I rode in this year, it was all preloaded for you, which was terrific, because I should mention the actual float. So typically the way you get on it is a ladder that is built into the back of the float, and it's pretty steep. And so you're carrying hundreds of pounds of throws repeatedly up and down the ladder. It's not the easiest thing to do. Again, the organization I rode with this time preloaded everything, which just made it really, really nice. You'll get dressed, as I mentioned. There usually is a seamstress there for minor alterations. In my case, because I was a guest rider, I was actually taking the last minute spot of someone, and I had to wear their clothes, you know, the costume that was sized for them. Now, because New Orleans is an incredibly small city, by just some random coincidence, I actually know the person whose spot I took and whose clothes I wore. I haven't actually reached out to him to tell him that yet, but I looked at the label and it was a friend of mine. And it, luckily enough for me, he and I are about the same size, so I didn't have too much trouble. But they'll do some minor alterations, or they'll pin things together or whatever needs to happen in order to make the costume fit you as best it can. Also that morning, you're going to, first of all, you want to really limit what you bring. So don't bring any jewelry, don't bring anything extraneous. Things like glasses, keys, your wallet, your wedding ring, or any jewelry, it is really easy for that stuff to fly overboard or to come off. And if anything like that falls on the floor of a float, you're going to have a really hard time finding it. So the key is bring as little as you have to. Obviously, if you wear eyeglasses, or it was really sunny, so I wore sunglasses, but I wore inexpensive sunglasses under my mask. You want to really limit what you bring. In some cases, there will be a storage area and or a valet to keep track of that stuff, depending on where you're leaving from. In other cases, there aren't. So you want to limit what you bring. But you do want to bring like a bag, like a cheap backpack or something, for personal items that you might want to bring on the float. And also if you bring any food and drink on the float. Again, that gets me to food and drinks. So you have to know ahead of time what the expectation is. The organization, typically there's a captain or a lieutenant or a sergeant. They'll have some sort of military name, but there'll be somebody in charge of the float. And that person will typically coordinate ahead of time and set the expectations. So it could be that they're going to provide food for the whole float. That was the case for me this year. The lieutenant brought food for everyone. So we had Popeye's fried chicken, we had Chick-fil-A sandwiches, we had sandwiches, regular sandwiches as well. They did not provide alcohol, or they might have provided a little bit. I don't actually remember, but most people brought their own alcohol. You don't want to bring glass. I don't think you can bring glass. Obviously, that's a safety hazard, and it's tight on a float, as I'm going to talk about. So the last thing you want is broken glass. People would be getting hurt, and you certainly can't be tossing glass off the side as trash. So you're going to get dressed. There's going to be alterations done. You'll store your personal items. You will know ahead of time if you're expected to bring food or drinks. Again, you should get those expectations from the organization and from the lieutenant of your float. And you're going to get there hours before. So it's a long day. If you ride, let's say at 11 in the morning, if your parade is scheduled to start at 11, you can expect to have to get there between 7 and 8 in the morning. And then you can expect, depending on which route your organization is taking, you can expect to be on the actual float for 5 to 6 hours, sometimes more, sometimes less. And it depends. If there's multiple parades going that day and there are accidents or breakdowns, you can easily be on a float for 8 hours. So it's a long day. You definitely want to wear comfortable shoes. And that also gets to what happens once you get on board. So I want to talk about that a little bit. First of all, you may or may not realize, but you'll look for it from now on. Every float has, with the exception of sort of like the king's float or some of the officers right in the front, the very small floats, the floats full of riders, you will notice there is always a raised portion. And what I mean by that is there's going to be some tall structure. If it's a double-decker float, then there'll be structures at the front and the back, obviously, to support it. But if it's a single-decker float, there'll still be some structure that's taller than the riders in the back, typically. And that houses the porta-potty, which is very important. Sometimes it's an actual porta-potty. Years ago, I have been on a float where it was simply a barrel with a toilet seat. The one I was on this year was a bit nicer. I would say it was sort of like a camping toilet. It also was in a room where there were hooks. I say a room. You're basically talking about a wooden box. But there was a room with hooks where you could hang your backpack, right, with your personal items. It's not deluxe by any means, but the floats need to have a place for you to go to the bathroom, because obviously it's a long day and you're probably going to need to go to the bathroom. So you can expect that. Once you get on board, one of the things you find is that once all the beads are loaded, there is almost no room for the riders, especially when it's fully loaded. You haven't left yet. You can't see the floor. So you have to kind of carefully step into your position on the float. And again, some floats may have 8 to 10 riders on a side, and some floats have hundreds of riders if they are multiple parts and they're double deckers. I think ours had about 16 or 18 riders, maybe 20 on the float. But you get on this float, you've climbed up this ladder, and usually you have to go through the porta potty area. You get into the main part of the float, and it is absolutely stuffed with throws. So you have to kind of just wind your way into your spot. And the first thing you have to do is kind of set up your area. In the organization I was in this year, and at least on the float I was on, it was pretty cool. Everyone pretty much had the same throw packages. And so what they said was, look, this is the way we do it. We kind of pile everything into the middle so that you have enough room to stand, have enough room to put your drinks, have a little bit of personal space. And I mean a little bit. And they said, we just throw communally. So, you know, if there's something you want to set aside for people that maybe you'll see along the route that you know, go ahead and do that. But everything else is essentially turn around, open a bag, and throw it. And it's just sort of self-policed. It's not a big deal. Everybody's throwing at about the same rate. And, you know, in other cases, if you've bought your own individualized package, then you're going to want to be, you know, really have that around you and have that set up as best you can. The other thing you do once you get on board and you're ready to go is you have to connect that harness that I mentioned to the float. Really, really important. Amazingly, there are very few major injuries each year. You know, there are some, and occasionally there are deaths, typically with people getting pushed or crawling in between floats or under floats. I think this year a rider did fall off, and I would love to know if he or she was wearing their harness. But you're going to connect your harness, because once that thing starts moving, it's not smooth. You're being pulled by a tractor. And some of the floats are very old. So in some of the carnival organizations, I know that the base, the underneath carriage, goes back to the late 1800s or early 1900s. Even the newer ones might have been constructed from old parts, but it is not a smooth ride. It's not like being in a luxury car going down the street. It's bumpy and it's uneven, and New Orleans streets aren't great to begin with. So the harness is really important. The other thing you want to do once you get on board is hydrate. You're often going to be waiting a while. This year, the day I rode during the day, it was very hot. It was in the 80s. You had this satin costume on that covered everything. I also had a cape on top of that, so there were multiple layers. I guess the good thing is I didn't have to worry about getting sunburned, but it was really hot. I drank 7 bottles of water, plus what I drank before I got on the float, and I can tell you it was not nearly enough. The other thing that's going to happen is you're going to get on, you're going to get settled, and you're going to wait. You're going to be sitting there sometimes for a couple of hours. I had the luxury of sitting. My float happened to be in a den, so we were protected from the sun. I have other friends that rode this year that were lined up on Chapultepec and were on an upper deck of a 2-decker float on a sunny day, and they had no cover. So while they might have been able to get off and get out of the sun a little bit, it's a long time to be out there. So that also brings up, depending on your costume, you may want to wear sunscreen. But hydration is really important. It's also a good time, again, to kind of establish the rules with your neighboring riders. Is it sort of community throws like we did on ours? Is it a little bit more you throw what you have and let's try to figure out where the line is between you and me? It's also a fun time. You get on board, everybody's happy, of course, and excited. If you do drink alcohol, people tend to start drinking. Again, that typically will start while you're getting dressed and having a communal meal. But while you're sitting there and waiting, I was trying to balance alcohol and water. I will tell you, though, there's a big adrenaline rush. You're excited. You might be nervous. You don't know what to expect. And it is really easy if you drink alcohol to overdrink and or to forget to drink water. Right, you're talking, you're excited, you're looking at the other floats. If you are lined up on a street, then people are walking by and waving and talking to you. So there's a lot going on. So all of that, we haven't even started. So now, once you start, again, I mentioned you have to be masked at all times. You have to, and in our case, we had a headdress on, so you have to keep that on at all times. You have to be harnessed. So these are more tips, but you need to be aware and pace yourself. So be aware of the people around you. Be aware not to lean over because you don't want to fall, even though you're harnessed. You also don't want to lean over and have someone in the crowd grab you. You know, they're reaching out to grab for beads or trinkets or whatever. But if something gets hung up on your arm and then someone is on somebody's shoulders, let's say, and grabs that and you're connected to that pair of beads, let's say, you can get hurt. So you really want to be aware of that. I can't say this enough. You want to pace yourself. I have ridden many times and I definitely overserved myself this year. It was hot. I was conscious about it. I had a great meal. I had a ton of water, but then I started drinking and, you know, I'm drinking what I brought and somebody else. Often people will bring things like brandy milk punch or daiquiris or things that can easily fit in, say, a plastic milk jug. And people say, oh, do you want this? Do you want that? In our case, we had champagne to kind of kick off the day. All of a sudden, you know, you're drinking different things and it's hot. And at least for me, when I get excited and the adrenaline of seeing the crowd, it's easy to just lose track and start drinking and not eating enough. And I ate a good bit actually throughout the day. But you want to be mindful of food and drink, alcohol intake, water intake. Don't lean over the float, as I mentioned, because you can unintentionally hurt yourself or get someone else hurt. On the flip side, you really want to take a moment and enjoy the scene. Like you can get in this kind of rhythm where you're constantly reaching down and throwing things and the beads are all tangled up and you're just throwing. And it's really this year, because I had done it so many times and had been so long since I did it, I really tried to catch myself periodically and just stop for a moment and take in the scene. The view from a Mardi Gras float is an amazing view. I love being in the crowds. I love being with my family. It's a fun thing. But being on a float and looking down at thousands and thousands of people cheering and waving and yelling, throw me something, mister, it's a pretty tremendous view. It's one of the neatest things you can do in New Orleans. And you also, when you take a moment, you'll see people barbecuing, you'll see kids running around. You longtime listeners have heard me talk about parade ladders. You'll see children in the ladders. You'll see families dressed up in costume, other people in purple, green, and gold. There's just a ton to see. So my advice is try to really take in the moment. And that periodically means just taking a drink or a sip of water and or getting something to eat and just stopping to throw for a moment and just kind of see and watch. It's a almost indescribable experience, but it is easy to, again, the adrenaline takes over and you're throwing, and no matter what you do, the beads are going to be all tangled up and there's stuff all over the place, and you can get caught up in that and then like be finished and not have the memory of the crowds. And particularly depending on the route you're on, sometimes you make a turn onto a different street and you just hear this roar of a crowd. And that's a pretty special thing. It's really fun. A couple of like personal tips, just from my own experience, make eye contact. So it's really fun to just like connect with a child or an adult or whatever, make eye contact and then throw them something. You'll see them light up. You'll see them wave thank you. The other part of that is it's kind of a safety issue. Don't fling things. Like, so be careful. You are throwing things that are heavy. You know, if you've ever been smacked in the face with a pair of beads or a heavy trinket or something like that, it hurts. So if you can make eye contact, then you're at least throwing to someone. You can't guarantee that they are going to catch it, but it's a little better than surprising them. Many years ago, I think I was a teenager, and we were riding on a truck float, and I recognized a family from church on the neutral ground. And so the little girl was running, I'll never forget this, and it's been 40 years. She was running around a bush just playing. She was probably 5 years old. And I recognized them, and I got so excited, and I picked up a bean bag that I had, and I threw it, and I was trying to throw it near her. Well, I hit her in the head and just knocked her down. And she was just like sprawled out. I don't think she was hurt, but she was just like, you know, dazed. And I remember the next week at church going up to the family and explaining what had happened and apologizing. And of course, they had no idea that it was me or what had happened. But it's easy for that kind of stuff to happen. So I think it's fun to make eye contact. It's also a safe thing. And like, it's a day about connections, right? And so people's eyes light up when you connect with them and they see that you're trying to throw them something. So that's really fun and something I would tell you to do. Engage with the crowd. People are so excited, not only to catch stuff, but you'll see people holding up signs that it's their birthday or it's their first visit, it's their first Mardi Gras. Also, particularly if you're local, you'll see people you know. And even though I was masked, I recognized a lot of people. I saw people with Beyond Bourbon Street hats. I saw people with NOLA T-shirt Club of the Month T-shirts. Of course, they're a sponsor of mine. So I made sure to single out those folks. I like to smoke cigars. So whenever I saw someone smoking a cigar, if I could get their attention, I would get their attention and then throw them something special. It was a real treat for me. I hadn't ridden. Marie and I have not ridden since our children were born intentionally because we wanted to be with them. The girls are 11 years old now, and we felt like this would be, they're old enough that it would be okay for dad not to be with them for one parade. I mean, we still went out, gosh, I don't know, 6 or 7 days. But it was a real thrill. I hope it was a thrill for them, but it was a huge thrill for me to see my family as we came up on the spot where I knew they would be, and to be able to throw them something special, but mostly just to see them from the perspective of the float. I know they took pictures of me. I wish I had taken pictures of them. But if you're local, that's a really fun thing. And it doesn't matter. Like, at the end of the day, 2 days later, you end up with all of this stuff and you don't know what to do with it. But in the moment, it's fun. It's just part of the experience, right? To be a kid or a kid at heart and be, you know, reaching out for throws. And it's always fun when you recognize someone and can throw them stuff. So that's a lot of fun. When you finish. So in some cases, as I mentioned, there might be a ball or an extravaganza. In my case, the ball was the same day as the parade, and there was a little bit of a gap. So kind of like northern weddings in the United States, right, where you'll have an event in the morning, and then there's a break, and then there's a dinner in the evening. That's kind of the experience I had. If you are, again, in say, Orpheus or Bacchus or Endymion, the parade rolls right into this extravaganza that they have, and so it's just one leads directly into the other. Most, if not all of those, also have a separate ball on a different night, a week or two before. You don't want to end up, so pacing is important on the float. You don't want to be stingy, certainly, but you also don't want to end up with any throws when you're finished. Because if you do, you have to take all that stuff off the float. So you really want to be mindful of pacing yourself and trying to get rid of everything before you get off. Because as hard as it was to put everything on the float, if you had to help load it, the last thing you want is at the end of a long day or night to have to take things off. And then depending on where you're going next, have to schlep all that stuff with you. You want to pick up after yourself as much as you can. Years ago, they used to measure the success of Carnival by the tonnage of trash that was picked up afterwards. Nowadays, we are trying, and this is actually a challenge for Mardi Gras in general, about how do you become more eco-friendly and how do you reduce the footprint. The amount of trash is incredible, both on the float and in the crowds. And it's a whole thing if you've ever stayed after a parade and watched the street sweepers come by and how much they clean up the street quickly. But riders do end up tossing some of the trash bags and things like that off to the side. But an awful lot of that ends up on the float. So while it's a different... At the end of the float parade, it's much easier to move around because all of the throws are gone. There's just this huge amount of trash. So you do want to try to be mindful of that and pick up. You also want to remember to collect any of your personal stuff that you brought. And again, keep that to a minimum. I brought a cheap one of those backpacks that folds up into a bag, you know, folds itself up into a bag off of Amazon for a couple of dollars. I had very few things in there, really nothing that I cared about. So I didn't have money, I didn't have my ring, I didn't have any of that. I had extra contacts and drops for that. I had some Tylenol, and I had the food and drink that I brought, and that was it. But you do want to remember to grab that stuff when you get done, and then you want to have a plan to get home. Again, some end back at a den. Mostly they don't go back to their dens, though. The float, the route is one way. So it starts in one place, ends in another. You'll get off and either you'll be going into an event or you will be bused back to where you started, where your vehicles are, or you will be bused to wherever an event is or something like that. One thing I would do differently that I didn't do this year is I would not have driven to the location. I would have either gotten a ride share or gotten Marie to drop me off because I was exhausted, I was dirty, and I did drink a lot. So I think I was okay by the end, but I would change that so that I don't have to worry about that. Because again, it's easy for, if you do drink, it's easy for that to get away from you. And I was mindful of it near the end, but I think I would have eliminated that worry. Plus, you're parking a car somewhere, and obviously people know you're in a parade. So, you know, while I didn't experience this and don't know anyone that did, you're a real easy target. If there's a whole bunch of cars sitting around and people know that you're in a parade, that kind of makes that a target. So I hope that kind of gives you an idea. Look, riding in a Mardi Gras parade in New Orleans is just this unforgettable experience. It's exhilarating. It's unique. I would encourage you to add it to your bucket list. I hadn't done it in a long time. Again, I hadn't ridden since before the kids were born, and I'm so glad I got the opportunity to do it this year. I had turned down several offers to ride over the past years because they were younger and I just really wanted to be with them all the time. And then this year we thought, you know, it's one day that I'm not going to be with them. It'll be fine. And it was, you know, we still, again, I think, I don't know, we probably went to a dozen parades as a family. I think we went 7 straight days. So missing out on dad being with them for one day wasn't a big deal, but that's why we hadn't done it. And I forgot how much fun it is to ride. And I would just encourage you to do it. Again, there's opportunities at all financial levels. There's opportunities all different parades, whether you want to ride in the daytime or the evening. I've done both. They're really neat experiences. There's something magical at nighttime. There's also something magical about Mardi Gras Day. There's something pretty wonderful about, gosh, really when you start on, say, Thursday before Mardi Gras, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, each of those days is super special in its own way, has its own vibe, its own feel. The weekend before, same way. It used to be much more quieter and a little bit less crowded, but that's not true anymore, I think, because the quality of the parades has gone up. There are parades that are all men, all female. There are parades that are co-ed. Again, for kids, there is a parade called the Little Rascals, which is for kids. But if you're a family, the way you want to ride is going to be a family with young children. The way you're going to want to ride is in a truck parade. If you have adult children, my neighbors rode in a parade that was on a Friday night, and they had their whole family on because I think the youngest is 18. So that's something fun to do. It's just a ton of fun. I hope I've covered a lot. I've been talking now for 54 minutes. I hope that I've covered kind of the ins and outs and really giving you something to think about. Now is the time, if you're listening to this in March or April of any year, but I'm recording this in 2023, now's the time to start doing your research. Find out, ask friends who have ridden, or go to the websites and see what the options are. Reach out to the organizations so you can understand what's available, what's not, what the costs are, and you can plan for that. And, you know, and then additionally, if you're not here in New Orleans, you have to also think about travel plans. It's a ton of fun, though. I think there's something for everyone. There's a carnival organization for everyone. It's just such a fun time. I can't describe how much fun I had. And for me, getting to see my family in the crowd was something I'd never experienced before. So that was really, really a ton of fun. So I highly encourage you to do it. Before we go, two quick reminders about how you can support the show. For information about Mardi Gras and all else there is to do in New Orleans, please consider buying my travel guide. Like the podcast, it's called Beyond Bourbon Street, An Insider's Guide to New Orleans. You can pick it up online at any of your favorite online retailers. You can get an autographed copy from NOLATshirtClub.com, or you can buy one from me directly and I'll personalize it. And I'll put links in the show notes to how you can do all those options. Lastly, if you like the work I'm doing, please consider becoming a patron through Patreon. For a few dollars a month, you'll be helping me provide you with content. Plus, we have perks at several different levels. And now that we're starting to get out of COVID, and I sort of say that with air quotes, but, you know, it's starting to move on, we're going to be doing some live events, which we're going to announce soon. And those are open to everyone, but Patreon members get first crack at tickets to limited events, so things like tours and dinners and that kind of thing. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to my daughters to close us out.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.